Well, we will look for a while now in the 11th chapter. You're going to find this a little bit tedious. After Alexander's kingdom broke up after his death, it was divided into four sections, and this 11th chapter follows two of them. The kingdom of the north, which was Syria, and the kingdom of the south, which was Egypt. And because they're called the kingdom of the north and the kingdom of the south is that it was north and south of Palestine. And in prophetic scriptures, when God gives a direction, it is in a direction from Palestine. And in his earthly dealings, this is mainly the center of his operation. In years past and in the ministry of Jesus, Jesus was frequently in Jerusalem, and all of his ministry was in the area that we call Palestine. And in the future, it will be his center of operation of the earth. So we will deal with these two kings for about 200 years or more, down to the time of the Romans. And then before the vision is over, in the latter part of the 11th chapter, we'll take up the subject of the beast. And this will continue until the Lord comes and the great tribulation takes place as recorded in chapter 12. Now the angel is still talking to Daniel. Also I, in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and to strengthen him. And now will I show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia. That doesn't mean it would be the only kings, but builds up to the fourth. Now let us notice for just a moment in the fourth chapter of the book of Ezra on these three kings. In verse 6, there is a king called Ahasuerus. In verse 7, there is a king called Artaxerxes. And in the 24th verse, there is a king called Darius. He's not the one in Daniel. Notice the 24th verse, then ceased the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. So it ceased into the second year of the reign of Darius, the king of Persia. Now this was a different Darius than the one that we read of in Daniel. He had passed off the scene. Now here are evidently the three kings, Ahasuerus, Artaxerxes, and Darius. And then there is a king that is to be very wealthy. He shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. Now, Persia invaded Greece. And this is historical. And they created a great resentment toward themselves. And that was one of the reasons that Alexander led his great forces against the forces of Persia, was to wipe out this insult to their state. The third verse says, a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. This, of course, is Alexander the Great, who reigned, according to your marginal, who took the initiative in 332 B.C. He's represented earlier by the goat with the horn between his eyes. When he shall stand up, his kingdom, the fourth verse, shall be broken and shall be divided toward the four winds of heaven. Remember, we saw the leopard with four wings, and also back there, the expression four winds of heaven is used, and it was divided between his four generals. He had two sons, but one was murdered before and one after his death. Notice this was not to be to his posterity, nor according to his dominion, which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others beside these, evidently beside his descendants. Then the king of the south of course is Egypt, shall be strong in one of his princes, one of Alexander's princes, and he shall be strong above him, and have dominion, and his dominion shall be a great dominion. In the sixth verse, in the end of years, they shall join themselves together, for the king's daughters, the south, shall come to the king of the north to make an agreement. I'm glad we live in the times that we do now. Women were just pawns then. And this girl was given to him, and he had to divorce his wife, Laodice, for Bernice. And she was supposed to represent her father and seek his interest, but she wouldn't do it. Well, that's another one that comes later. This one shall not return the power of the arm. She replaced the other queen, and the queen had her friends rise up against her, and she was destroyed. And the restored queen, by the time they live in, the restored queen poisoned her husband and had her son made king. Very nice, gentle people. She shall be given up, and they that brought her, and he that begat her, and he that strengthened her in these times, but out of a branch of her roots. This was her brothers, a brother of Bernice, and he invaded the north to kind of avenge what had been done to his sister. Out of a branch of her root shall one stand up in his estate, and shall come with an army, and shall enter into the fortress of the king of the north, and shall deal against them, and shall prevail, and shall also carry away captives into Egypt, their gods, with their princes, with their precious vessels of silver and gold. He went away with much booty. He shall continue more years than the king of the north. So the king of the south shall come into his kingdom, and shall return to his own land. The king of the south again was Egypt. But his sons shall be stirred up against, and shall assemble a multitude of great forces, and one shall certainly come and overflow. The sons mentioned here was of the wars of between Syria and Palestine. In the 11th verse, the king of the south shall be moved with choler, and shall come forth and fight with him, even with the king of the north, and he shall set forth a great multitude, but the multitude shall be given into his hand. Just a battle back and forth, and Schofield used the expression that Palestine was the anvil between the hammers. The battle was continually fought either over Palestine or in Palestine, and if the Egyptians wanted to go fight against the Syrians, they had to go across the western part of Palestine. If the Syrians wanted to go fight against the Egyptians, they had to go across the western part of Palestine. You remember when we studied in the books of Kings, we read about Josiah, that godly king. When a king of Egypt was going up to the river Euphrates to fight, Josiah withstood him and he killed him. But he said, I don't come to fight against you, but he had to go across Palestine to get there. The 12th verse, when he has taken away the multitude, his heart shall be lifted up, and he shall cast down many 10,000, but he shall not be strengthened by it. For the king of the north shall return and shall set up a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come after certain years with a great army, and with much riches. Can you quite imagine what a fight would be like in those days? Their distant weapons would be throwing a spear or shooting a bow, or they'd stand up and fight hand to hand with short spears or swords, with a shield in one hand and a spear or a sword in the other, and they must have been very bloody affairs, very fierce affairs. Well, when he came back, now, in those days there shall many stand up against the king of the south, also the robbers of thy people, a group of apostate Jews, as turned out to be, shall exalt themselves to establish the vision, but they shall fall. So the king of the north, in this instance Antiochus the Great, shall come and cast up a mount, and take the most fenced cities, and the arms of the south shall not withstand, neither his chosen people, neither shall there be any strength to withstand. But he that cometh against him shall do according to his own will, and none shall stand before him, and he shall stand in the glorious land. Now here is another title for Palestine, the pleasant land, the glorious land, the holy land, which by his hand shall be consumed or glorified or perfected, as the word means. And the Jews that had helped him in the battle, he honored them in dealing out good to Palestine. He shall also set his face to enter with strength of his whole kingdom and upright ones with him. Thus shall he do, and he shall give him the daughter of women, corrupting her, but she shall not stand on his side, neither before him. This was the one that was given to make a league, and she was to kind of be a spy in the camp, but she didn't stand up with her father. She stood for her husband. After this shall he turn his face into the isles. Now this fellow had some troubles, and he conquered some of the isles, and he turned to Greece, tried to conquer Greece. And at this point in history, Greece had a mutual assistance pact with Rome. He shall take many, but a prince. This was, what was his first name? Asiaticus was the last part of it. It was voted that he should fight against this man by the Senate in Rome, on his own behalf shall cause the reproach offered by him to cease without his own reproach. He shall cause it to turn upon him. It is said that this Roman general demanded that he cease fighting, that he keep the peace. And he tried to do like people will. He wanted time, and it is said that this warrior drew a circle around him with a spear, probably, and demanded that he not step out of that circle until he had reached an agreement with them, which he did, but he didn't intend to keep it. He shall turn his face unto the isle, shall take many but a prince of his own behalf. I read that in the 18th verse. Then he shall turn his face toward the fort of his own land, but he shall stumble and fall and not be found. Because of his losing all of his treasures, he endeavored to rob an idol temple, and this infuriated the populace, and they destroyed him. Then shall stand up in his estate a raiser of taxes in the glory of the kingdom, but within few days he shall be destroyed, neither in anger nor in battle. And in his estate shall stand up a vile person, to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably and attain it, the kingdom, by flatteries. We believe this is possibly Antiochus Epiphanes. With the arms of a flood shall they be overflown from him, before him, and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant, possibly referring to the priest. After the league made with him, he shall work deceitfully, for he shall come up and shall become strong with a small people. Now this covered a period, as I stated, of some 200 years or so. He shall enter peaceably upon the fattest places of the provinces, and shall do that which his fathers have not done, nor his fathers' fathers. He shall scatter among them the prey and spoil, riches. And in the 25th verse, he shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south with a great army. And the king of the south shall be stirred up to battle with a very great and mighty army, but he shall not stand, for they shall forecast devices against him. They that feed of his portion of his meat shall destroy him. His own sons turned against him. And both these kings' hearts shall be to do mischief, and they shall speak lies at one table, making agreements that neither intended to keep. He shall not prosper, for yet the end shall be at the time appointed. Then shall he return into his land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the holy covenant, and he shall do exploits and return to his own land. At that time he shall return and come toward the south, but it shall not be as the former time, for the ships of Kittim. This seemingly is the first really entrance of Rome into the picture, though they had touched on it earlier, shall come against him. Therefore he shall be grieved and shall return and have indignation against the holy covenant. I have read that the Jews heard that he had been destroyed, and there was great delight among them, and he heard about this. And so he came back to take vengeance on them, because they rejoiced because they thought he was dead. And he'll have intelligence with them that forsake the holy covenant. Some of the ungodly Jews sided in with him and betrayed their brethren. Arms shall stand on his part, and they shall pollute the sanctuary of strength, shall take away the daily sacrifice. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries, and they that understand among the people. Now it was in these days that the Maccabees came on the scene. The first one, I've forgotten his first, I believe the word Maccabees means hammer. And they were used as the hammers of God to bring this man into subjection. Now coming to the 36th verse, we go to the end of this age. We take up the Antichrist in person. And I like the way God has arranged his word. You don't have it all in one place. You have some things about the Antichrist earlier in this chapter. You have him in Thessalonians. You have him put before us in a certain way in Matthew, in the Revelation. The king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god. Alexander had himself declared a god. I think Adolf Hitler thought he was a god. You remember there was a decree signed that anybody that made a petition to any god than Darius for 30 days would be thrown in the lion's den. And we read of the Antichrist that he's going to sit in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. The world wondered after the beast. They worshiped the beast. I think to me one of the most astonishing things in the Bible is when Satan asked Christ to worship him. Now, you think about that for just a moment. The creature asked his creator to worship him. Think about that. Christ had created Satan. And Satan says, all shall be thine if you'll fall down and worship me. And isn't it an interesting thing that in history, men have wanted to be divine. In the early days of the Christian church, there was great trouble because they wouldn't offer incense to the emperor. And men have wanted to be worshipped. And this king, for purposes of his own, God is going to allow Satan to inspire him. And he's going to show himself that he is God. He'll speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. There's going to be an indignation against the Jewish people, and against this man, and against the world for that matter. The book of the Tribulation manifests this. But shall exalt himself. Now again I quote from Thessalonians 2. That there shall come a falling away first, and that man of sin shall be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposeth and exalteth himself above every one that is worshipped or that is called God, so that he as God sitteth in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. Here it is stated, he shall magnify himself above every god, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. It will be very short. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers. Whether this means, as many believe, that he will be an apostate Jew, which I doubt. I am confident the Antichrist will be Roman. He will probably be one, not a Christian, but one who has at one time in life maybe belonged to some denominational group. He won't regard the desire of women. Now we understand that the desire of Jewish women was Christ, to be the mother of Christ. He would not regard him, nor regard any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. This is hard to realize. I followed the rise of Adolf Hitler in the 30s, and how that man, he was one of the greatest egotists that I ever read about. And he was the man in charge, absolute dictator. It will probably never be known how many people died in his concentration camps and his forced labor groups. If you could visit some of those concentration camps and read the books that were written about them, it seems almost unbelievable that a modern civilized nation could act that way. And yet we forget so easily that the God of this world is a murderer and a liar, and that the world still clings to him as their God. But when this man comes, he will have the full backing of Satan. In his estate shall he honor the God of forces, probably the powers of war. A God whom his fathers knew not shall he honor with gold and silver, and with precious stones and pleasant things. Thus shall he do in the most strong holds, the fortresses, with a strange God whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, perhaps Satan himself. He shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. And at the time of the end, now notice this, at the time of the end, the king of the south shall push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him, like a whirlwind. There's going to be a force from the south, and a force from the north come against him. And let us pause here just a moment. I've touched on this elsewhere. But in Revelation, the Euphrates River is going to be dried up. This is Revelation 16, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. And in Ezekiel 38 and 39, there are great hordes that come in from the north. So it seems as though the forces will be converging from the south and from the north and from the east and from the west. And we remember from Zechariah 14 this astonishing statement, I, God says, will gather all nations against Jerusalem. All nations. And when the great battle starts from Isaiah 63, it seems as though it will start in the south. Let's glance at that just a moment. The 63rd chapter of Isaiah. In the first verse, who is this that cometh from Edom? Now you know where Edom was. It was south of Palestine. With dyed garments from Bozra. This that is glorious in his apparel, traveling in the greatness of his strength. I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Then the question is asked him, wherefore art thou red in thine apparel, and thy garments like him that treadeth in the winefat? I have trodden the winepress alone, and of the people there was none with me. For I will tread them in mine anger, and trample them in my fury, and their blood shall be sprinkled upon my garments, and I will stain all my raiment, for the day of vengeance is in mine heart, and the year of my redeemed is come. The sixth verse says, I will tread down the people in mine anger and make them drunk in my fury. But notice that it seems to start from the south. Now notice this in the 34th chapter of the book of Isaiah also. Another little reference to this same time. The second verse says, the indignation of the Lord is upon all nations, and his fury upon all armies, upon their armies. And he hath utterly destroyed them, he hath delivered them to slaughter. Their slain also shall be cast out, and their stink shall come up out of their carcasses. The mountains shall be melted with their blood. All the hosts of heaven shall be dissolved, and the heavens shall be rolled together as a scroll. All their hosts shall fall down as the leaf falleth from off the vine. The fifth verse, for my sword shall be bathed in heaven, and behold, it shall come down upon Idumea. Now, do you know what Idumea is? I believe it's the Grecian form, if I remember correctly, for Edom. And upon the people of my curse. The sword of the Lord is filled with blood. It is made fat with fatness, with the blood of lambs and goats, with the fat of the kidneys of rams. For the Lord has a sacrifice in Bozrah. That was one of the greater cities of Edom. And a great slaughter in the land of Idumea. And it seems as though this battle will have its beginning in that area. That's where the Lord intervenes, I mean to say. And these forces come from the north and from the south. And the 40th verse, back to Daniel 11. At the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen, with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. He shall enter into the glorious land, as we read about it a little while ago in 11:16. And in Zechariah called the Holy Land. Enter into the glorious land, and many countries shall be overthrown. Really a judgment. But these shall escape out of his hand, seemingly not out of the Lord's hand, but out of his hand. Even Edom and Moab and Ammon, were east of Palestine. He shall stretch forth his hand also upon the countries, and the land of Egypt shall not escape. He shall have power over the treasures of gold and silver, and over all the precious things of Egypt, and the Libyans and the Ethiopians shall be at his steps. The Libyans is a country west of modern Egypt, and Ethiopia was south of modern Egypt. Tidings out of the east. Now let's glance for just a moment at Revelation 16 and notice this great force, these great hordes coming from the east. The 12th verse says, the sixth angel poured out his vial upon the great river Euphrates, and the water thereof was dried up, that the way of the kings of the east might be prepared. You know what Japan is called, don't you? The land of the sun rising. Whether Japan and China will be a part of this particular forces the east, we do not know, but they're called eastern powers. And I wanted you to notice that there are going to be hordes of people converging on Palestine from every direction. And now you wonder, why? Well, I'm going to read again in the 16th chapter of Revelation. In the 13th verse, I saw three unclean spirits like frogs come out of the mouth of the dragon, out of the mouth of the beast, out of the mouth of the false prophet. For they're the spirits of devils working miracles, which go forth unto the kings of the earth, unto the whole world, to gather them to the battle of the great day of God Almighty. Now, did you ever get talked into something that was absolutely foolish, and after it was over, you wondered, why in the world did I get drawn into that? Well, now, these evil spirits are going to completely sell these nations on going up to Palestine and fighting. You marvel at people's total lack of judgment. A man told me one time that a man came to their house many years ago selling interest in a mine in Arizona, and they lived in Tennessee. And his brother said, we'll take $5,000 worth of that. Well, I would say that was investing without investigating. Well, these men will be persuaded to bring their armies and fight. If you ever read, now one of the monks that led a bunch of the crusaders against Palestine, some of the most absurd things, he had a goose and a hog. The goose was supposed to represent the Holy Ghost. I've forgotten what the hog represented. And people can be so foolish to believe, so absolutely foolish. If you don't believe this, look at how the current money raisers talk people into things. I have in my car a little sheet of paper about that big with a little bundle bag of meal fastened to it. It wasn't sent to me. Somebody gave it to me a couple of weeks ago. It was sent out by Oral Roberts, and everybody is to pray over this piece of meal, this little bag of meal about that big. Then they're going to send it back to him, and he's going to make a great cake out of it. Well, sometimes I think people are insane. To think that I'd have to have a bag of meal to make contact with somebody 300 or 400 miles down in Oklahoma, and I'll be frank with you, I don't know whether I want contact or not. Well, these men are going to be totally deceived by Satan into coming to Palestine to fight. And they're going to come in, really now, friends, they're going to come from all directions around. Ezekiel 38 and 39 pictures the hordes from the north as being destroyed, and what a calamitous thing it's going to be. The 43rd verse brings out that he will have treasures over the gold and silver. In Revelation 13, if the Lord permits us to get there, we will point out that he will get a stranglehold on the economic side of life as well as the religious side. We emphasize things about worshiping the beast. We forget sometimes about the economic side. No man can buy or sell without his mark. And tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. This may be the horde that will come in, as represented in Ezekiel 38 and 39, and those that I just read about in Revelation 16. And he shall go forth with great fury to destroy it, and utterly to make away many. Now this, when a man of this nature is crossed, you see, for a very short time, he's going to have things in his hand. But there will be interventions from God. I picture him like this. In Revelation 17, he's shown with a woman on his back. And this represents apostate Christendom. Before you get through that chapter, that woman is destroyed. And of course, he can't have anything around that represents apostate Christendom, because at least nominally, they represent God. He will get rid of that. That will be of God. But then, he will also turn his hand against the Jews. He will be permitted of God to destroy the two witnesses according to Revelation 11. And here is where God will intervene. God will use that power, those powers, the 10 kings, to destroy the woman. But then, he will turn around and destroy them because, in part, there will be many other reasons, but in part, you remember the dragon of Revelation 12 goes to make war with the remnant of the seed. The word, I don't know whether it's war or not, I don't remember. But anyway, it's going to be just a great hodgepodge of killing and killing and killing. And when men like this are crossed, they can't take it. He's going to have great fury. He shall plant the tabernacles of his palaces between the seas and the glorious holy mountain, Palestine, where seemingly he will make his headquarters for a time. But he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. We're not told here how he comes to his end. Revelation 19 shows it. Daniel earlier said the body given to the burning flame. Thessalonians 2 says, whom the Lord shall consume, shall destroy with the brightness of his coming, and consume with the... Getting mixed up, I'm not quoting it right. Thessalonians 2, 2 Thessalonians 2, and the Lord shall destroy by the brightness of his coming, the second verse, whom the Lord shall consume with the spirit of his mouth and destroy with the brightness of his coming. And now you can see that this takes us from the next verses clear down into the great tribulation.